Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Before we get into today's episode, just want to acknowledge that this program is broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And before we get into the talk portion of this episode, I'm going to start off with a little music. This next and first one is from a group that got a lot of play this summer here at the station. And with this dreary weather, thought I would evoke some of that summer feeling with Empanadas Ilegales. This is La Trifulca.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That last track was Empanadas Ilegales with La Trifulca. And we're going to be getting into the first talk portion of this hour. This is coming from Kitimat, BC, from a community journalist from CICK News and Smithers, Pamela Hassan. This is a piece titled Community Leaders Renew Call for Year-Round Shelter in Kitimat, which I think exemplifies that the need for shelter, the need for year-round shelter and support for those, especially during extreme weather events, is not something that is exclusive to major cities such as Vancouver, and it's something that province-wide needs to be considered. So without further ado, here is Pamela Hassan with that piece.
This is CICK News. Skeena Emily Rattay, along with community partners, has issued an open letter to the Ministry of Housing urging the province to fund Kitimat's extreme weather shelter year-round. Right now, the shelter only operates seasonally. Despite Kitimat's harsh climate, the shelter is run by Temetic Status of Women. Executive Director Jordana Vello says the organization is ready and willing to operate a full-time shelter and already works closely with the District of Kitimat, Northern Health, and other community agencies. But the current site is upstairs, inaccessible, and temporary, leaving people with mobility issues unable to use it. Vello says without year-round funding, those currently relying on the shelter will likely return to tents once seasonal funding expires. Local organizations, the District of Kitimat, and the Chamber of Commerce all have joined the call for permanent shelter funding. They say the need is clear, the community partners are prepared, and people's safety depends on it. Tell me what you're seeing in Kitimat.
The whole reason behind this public letter is this is actually one in a series. I have been reaching out to this ministry trying to get them to basically fund our weather shelter year round. And the reason is really simple. If you've been to Kitimat, it's not hard to tell that we have extreme weather all year. This is not the kind of place where people should be sleeping outside. And so we actually, this past summer, had our first ever homeless encampment, or at least the first one that we've had in town here in the downtown area, where it's been very visible to people. I would wager that has been going on for a while in the bush and things like that. But this was the first time it was really in people's faces. And the reason being, our weather shelter is a temporary weather shelter, and it's only funded through the ministry for a few months in the winter. And when I first moved to Kitimat, we didn't even have that, something I fought for when I was on city council. It took a while to get people on board, but we did get there and we managed to get that up and running. And it's been very successful and it's helped people in the community because we do have people that are struggling. We do have people that don't have access to those same supports as others in our community that are less fortunate that need access to that. Basically, I spoke with the nonprofit that administers the actual shelter through BC Housing. And I said, look, the people that are sleeping in this encampment, would they be sleeping in the shelter if it was available? And I was told unequivocally, yes. These are people that utilize the shelter all through the winter. They are local people that do not have anywhere to live and they need shelter. And as somebody that has been homeless before, I know how horrible that is. I know what it's like to sleep outside in that. And it's degrading and it's inhumane to think that we would be in a position where we don't have any form of shelter for these people. To me, it was a no-brainer that shelter needs to be open year-round. I reached out to the ministry. To be fair, back in the spring, I actually brought it up in budget estimates. Again, different minister at the time. So this was before their shuffle. And I was told very clearly that he was willing to work with me to make sure that our shelter was open year-round. And then I requested meetings. They pushed me down the road a couple months. Then we had a new minister request again. Nothing got answered. So that's when I finally decided to write a letter. And I also got the District of Kitimat, the nonprofit that operates the space, and the Chamber of Commerce to all write letters into the ministry. Sent those in September. Just got a response. And not only is that completely unacceptable to go a few months without a response from the ministry, on top of that, I have an overwhelming number of cases that are sitting with this ministry that haven't been responded to. And I've reached my breaking point.
Staying on this one, what was the response that you got from the ministry?
it was essentially, we can't do anything to help you. Here are links to our homelessness prevention strategy. We're not funding it year round. I don't even think the minister read it, to be honest. This was not the minister's response. This was, they wrote something for her, someone of her staff did, and she signed off on it. And it took more than 2 months for her to get it.
I reached out to BC Housing and the Ministry of Housing and Municipal Affairs, but was not able to acquire an interview before my deadline. I was able to connect with Jordana Vello, however, the executive director of Tematic Status of Women in Kitimat, the community partner who operates the shelter currently and who are working with BC Housing to manage and potentially further permanent overnight sheltering in Kitimat.
Hi, I'm Jordana Vello, executive director at Tematic Status of Women.
Thanks, Jordana, so much for making time to speak with me today. So we are speaking about the need for overnight shelter in Kitimat. And I know that the current shelter, it's seasonal funding and it expires April 30th of 2026. So can you tell me in reality, what does that mean for the people who are relying on that shelter and using that shelter now?
Yeah, so last year we had an encampment. And so the majority of those people came over to the shelter, or were 20% were housed prior to the shelter opening. And then the rest of them either found other housing or came over to the extreme weather shelter. So we're expecting that when the extreme weather shelter closes, those people will most likely go back into tents if they can't find more permanent accommodations.
Okay. Can you describe what the shelter looks like?
So right now we operate out of Douglas Place, and that has two bedrooms on an upstairs kind of space. Each bedroom comes with a full bathroom. And so we have a lot of issues with accessibility right now with the current space. And BC Housing is absolutely aware of this, trying to look at different options for sure for the future. But right now this is what we have to use. So the stairs are quite steep, very difficult for people with any sort of mobility issues to climb. So that's our issue with the current space. Thankful for the current space, because without it, we wouldn't have anything.
I'm saying this in response to MLA Rattay's open letter that she wrote to the ministry and also NBC Housing as well. And does Tematic have the capacity to take on year-round shelter? And also, who are your other community partners, if you have any, that could help with this, with that role?
Yeah, we do feel like we have the capacity to take on a year-round shelter. We actually did a letter for MLA Rattay, as well as sent it to the district and BC Housing, just saying that Tematic Status of Women does have the capacity if there was an opportunity to run a year-round shelter. We do have a lot of partners in the community. We work closely with the District of Kitimat, with other community service providers, so Kitimat Community Development Center, Kitimat Community Services Society, Northern Health. We work closely with some government service agencies as well. So really well connected in the community, and do feel that we have the capacity and the partnerships that would be ideal in running a year-round shelter. So we have four funded beds. So BC Housing funds four beds from right now, October 1st to April 30th, which is actually a two-month extension from what we've seen in prior years. So prior years, we didn't start till November 1st through BC Housing and ended March 31st. So we have gotten 2 months extended on that contract. And then we also have three overflow beds that we can use if needed.
Oh. Are those on the second floor as well? Is it all in the same
all
unit?
All on the same, yeah. They're all, so we have four funded, and we have four in one room and three in the other. We'll try and limit and spread people out as much as we absolutely can.
You feel too, that's like the amount of beds that you have there for the needs of your community. Do you feel like that is, that's justifiable, that's enough?
I think that with the seven beds total, we don't turn people away often. There have been times where we've been full and had to turn people away, but with the full seven beds, we don't normally see that issue. I think that we would have more people accessing the shelter if the space was more accessible. I think that is a huge issue and a huge deterrent for people to access the shelter, is getting up those flights of, that flight of stairs is quite difficult.
Are you working on having more of an accessible, or even like a new build or reimagining of a different space so that it is more accessible?
Yeah, we are working in collaboration with BC Housing to look at different options. I think that comes with an application process through our agency and things like that. So that's something that we've been looking at internally as well. But I do feel that BC Housing has been open to those conversations and open to our issues with the space and its suitability right now, which has been really great to be able to have those open conversations with them.
Jordana, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this today.
Yes, and I appreciate you reaching out. Thank you.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
To all my friends, I don't think that you know me. You're all losers. Just admit that you don't need me.
Once again, you are listening to Speak Up, only on a CJSF 90.1 FM. That last track was from a band, a local band, that has been topping the charts here at CJSF. That was Loose Ends by Self Care off of their latest album, Doggy. You can find that on Bandcamp, D-A-W-G-Y. So you spell doggy in this case. And coming up next on Speak Up, we have a bird note for all of you. This one about pigeons that get tipsy.
This is Bird Note. Kereru, green-blue pigeons native to New Zealand, like to sun themselves after a good meal. Kereru have a distinct preference for fruit. In fact, many local trees depend on these pigeons. They're the only birds left that can both ingest and pass the seeds from the fruits of many native trees. But in warm summer months, the birds' sunbathing has a surprising side effect. A part of their digestive system, called the crop, stores their latest snack, where it begins to ferment. The birds, in essence, brew their very own batch of boutique throat wine. The rotund creatures often get so tipsy that they fall out of trees, prompting compassionate Kiwis, New Zealanders, not the birds, to deliver them to local bird rescues and let them sober up. One manager said it was ridiculous. People were bringing armfuls of these flaming drunk pigeons. In 2018, the citizens of New Zealand voted the Kereru as Bird of the Year. Perhaps conservation organization Forest and Bird described the species best. That absolute unit, the roundest boy, the devourer of fruit, the whooshiest of whooshes. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Once again, that was a Bird Note on Pigeons That Get Tipsy. You were listening to Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host Danny Nesvetterani. For our next talk portion of the hour, we're going to be switching it up in location. This is a piece coming out of CJTM Met Radio in Toronto, Canada. And this is coming from their local journalist, Mia Johnson, who did a long-form piece on a recent report that was put out by Social Planning Toronto about the hazards and low wages that personal support workers are facing within the province, something that is important to hear Canada-wide, and hopefully, some answers will come out of it. So without further ado, Mia Johnson with her piece from Met Radio.
A new report finds immigrant and racialized women working as personal care workers in Toronto underpaid and facing more hazards on the job than workers in institutional care. Professor Naomi Lightman is behind that report. She's a sociology professor at Toronto Metropolitan University. She's been studying care work for years, talking to care workers all over Canada in hospitals, long-term care homes, and as of late, those that support families still living at home. There was an Ipsos poll that came out in May of this year. 9 in 10 Canadians over the age of 45 said they would prefer in-home care over moving to a long-term care facility. And more than 90% of Canadians agreed that personal support workers have a positive impact on people's lives. Professor Lightman joined us in studio this week to discuss her report. We talked about the state of personal care work at home today, the stories she's heard, and what policymakers can do to close the gap. Here's our conversation. Hi, Professor Lightman. Thank you so much for coming on CJTM.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're going to talk about your report that came out. If you could tell me more about how you started getting involved in doing this research, what compelled you to focus on workers in this sector?
Absolutely. So my research for many years now has focused on care work more broadly. So when we talk about care work in its broadest sense, we're talking about childcare workers, we're talking about personal support workers across a range of different settings, so in hospitals and institutions, in long-term care homes as well as in home care. And specifically, my focus is on the workers. So we know that the people doing this type of paid care work are disproportionately immigrant and racialized women. And this is true in Toronto, in Canada, and really across all wealthy nations that I'm aware of. And we know as well that broadly speaking, they're undervalued. So this type of labor pays less than jobs with that workers engage in with comparable levels of education and skills. So, you know, some of my research has focused on Canada as a whole. Some of it has looked at care work cross-nationally. So looking at Canada in comparison to European countries, as well as the US. And some of it has been more city focused. So during the pandemic, I was actually working at the University of Calgary, and I did a report looking at the impact of COVID-19 on PSWs, which are called home healthcare aides in Alberta, but we're talking about the same people, working in long-term care homes. And that was really motivated by the fact that long-term care got a lot of press during the start of the pandemic because there were, you know, very unfortunately, disproportionate deaths among elderly and sick people in long-term care institutions. And that research highlighted, you know, the really unacceptable working conditions that low-wage workers were experiencing. And so this project really stemmed off of what I'd learned in the Calgary context. So kind of fast forward, you know, maybe 5 years, I've had two babies. I'm now in Toronto at TMU, and I'm thinking about the city of Toronto and, you know, the state of healthcare. And what I realize is from the literature, as well as from my own kind of on the ground work, is that if working conditions are poor in long-term care, they're even worse in home care. Home care is really as bad as it gets, I'd say, in terms of care work and employment conditions. And there's a lot of reasons for that that we can get into. But my focus for this report was specifically on home care because I think it didn't get as much attention as long-term care homes or hospitals during the pandemic. And I wanted to do both quantitative and qualitative research, but there wasn't the quantitative data that I wanted, and I really wanted to hear the voices and lived experiences of the workers. So for this project, I focused on qualitative interviewing, and I wanted it to be community-based research. So I've worked with Social Planning Toronto previously, and they were a really fantastic collaborator on this research because they have a lot of networks in the community. They're very grassroots, very progressive, doing fantastic work. So, you know, through a SHRC that I received, we decided to work on this report, focusing on employment conditions for immigrant women, PSWs in home care during the pandemic, but also at this point, just talking about the status quo. You know, have things gotten better since the pandemic? Are we moving towards improvement, or, you know, what is going on? And also what can be done to improve, you know, the current situation?
Yeah, I want to follow up on something you said. Why isn't it that home care workers are getting as much attention as long-term workers or personal care workers in hospitals?
Yeah, I think a lot of home care is invisible. I mean, people rely on home care. And if you talk to people, most people will have had some experience with someone in their life who might have experienced home care for either, you know, a short period after transitioning out of hospital or for an extended period. But at the same time, because this work is done in private homes, you know, there's very little oversight. We don't really know what's going on when PSWs go into people's private homes. And that makes it harder for these workers to organize because they're not located in one centralized setting. And yeah, it just means that I think a lot of it just goes under the radar. But when